Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. We are your support, so let's talk fucking cancer. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Let's Talk Fucking Cancer podcast. I am one of your hosts, Colette, and we have a very special episode today for our spotlight, and I am flying solo. No Julia, no Leah. We miss them dearly, but I have a personal interview that I am going to be doing for today's spotlight with the ever elusive Tay Huang. Welcome, Tay.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Of course, anytime.
So welcome to our studio, husband.
I love it. I love what you've done with the place. This is amazing.
You have maybe seen it for a glimpse here and there, but this is your first time sitting down in here with me.
I walk by it every day.
You walk by it every day, but you never sit here and give us your time and attention.
You're going to have my time. You're not going to have my attention.
This man. Okay, so what is so special about this episode, aside from it being my husband, is we wanted to talk to somebody that was a caregiver, to someone that had been through the cancer journey. And we think it's very important to put out there the caregiver's perspective. I think it's very important that we address caregivers in someone's cancer journey because many times the cancer patient is the focus, as they should be. But the caregivers themselves, there has to be a time and a place for them as well, because they are affected in a whole different way. And it's just very important that we give them the space to feel what they're feeling, share what they're feeling, and to feel okay about that and not have guilt over that. Because as I said, the cancer patient is typically the focus, but there is a time and a place for them to feel their feelings as well. So I know that my husband is not the most
caregiving person.
You're entertaining, that's for sure. But full of words. But on this subject, I thought it would be really, really cool if you could kind of break down for us just some of the ins and outs on what caregivers go through. So why don't you start with, what were we doing before my cancer journey? Do you remember what life was like?
Man, it's gonna be a long pause right now. I think we were living a normal life.
We thought, right?
Yeah, pretty normal. And our family just had a newborn.
Things were good.
Yeah,
right?
Things were really good.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have probably pictured a better family life. I don't think so.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. So what was it like? Do you remember the day that we got the news?
Man, I feel like it's
so long ago.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a long time ago, which I guess in a way, I think that's good, because mm-hmm. not that I want to forget, but it's, you're not going to make me cry.
Already?
Oh my gosh. Hold on.
It's nice to move forward though.
It is. I think the day we got the call, I think from what I remember on that day, it was a very dark and gloomy day.
And you see, listeners, why we laugh so much, because we're inappropriate. And this is how we get through things.
It was nighttime. Pretty sure it was nighttime. Mm-hmm. It's crazy because it actually was like after hours.
Yeah.
Pretty much, like, because we were waiting like all day. Mm-hmm. And I think we didn't get a call. And I think eventually, I mean, was it a phone call? I don't remember. Like,
it was. And she said that she waited till the last thing she had to do for the day because she did not want to make that phone call. So it's funny that you remember that it was so late.
Yeah. I just remember it was very late in the day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what? It's weird because I think I remember getting the call, and I think we're very, I don't know what the word is. Not that we're prepared, because you can't really prepare for it, but I think we knew right away what we were going to do.
Right.
If you're like if it was positive, like it was if you were diagnosed with it, I think we both knew, so what's the word? 110%, you're pretty much going through whatever needs to be done to right. take care of the issue.
Right.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I think that was the thing about it. It was just, we were going to bear down and no matter what, get through it. And we're going to fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, it's the whole fight or flight. I think we already know we're fighting from
exactly.
the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely feel the same from my perspective. Obviously I was just like, whatever we have to do, we're going to do it and we're going to do it as a family.
And but, I felt the same way.
Yeah. And I felt that from you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once we get the diagnosis and we see the doctors, we know kind of what treatments are going to be looking like. And we knew chemo was going to happen first and then surgery and then radiation. So we're just kind of going through the steps. How was that process for you as the caretaker? Because when we first got the news, you were off work on family medical leave because we had just had our baby.
Oh yeah, it's baby bonding. And
but then you went right back into working 12-hour shifts, working night shift. We got the help of your mom. But how was that for you? Because you didn't miss an appointment. You worked your hours. We had this new baby and you buckled down and you came to every chemo. I think there was one chemo, maybe. We insisted you stay home and you took me to every radiation.
I felt like it was my job. It's what I was supposed to do.
That's sweet.
I mean, being that I was your significant other. I felt like that's why we took our vows the way we did.
Oh, okay. Now you're going to make me cry.
You know, it was, like I said, it was my vow, basically, that the vows we took, that being your husband, that, it was pretty much my duty to be by your side as much as I can.
Wow. And obviously you were, and aside from the physical, taking me to appointments, being there for me, caring for me when I wasn't well, you were carrying an emotional burden that I don't think we ever talked about.
Just to go back to the appointments, I just can't guarantee I was awake for all of them.
No, you did sleep through a lot of them.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
A lot of your chemo stuff. I think I probably fell asleep in the chair.
Yeah. Yes. And you always wore your pink shoes. And so everyone,
that's when I started wearing my pink shoes.
That's when you started wearing your pink shoes, which he still wears to this day, listeners.
To this day.
7 years out. Is that how far we are?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be a lifetime of pink shoes. So
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And he's gotten many, many comments. Some people not realizing the significance.
Not at all. Which I don't understand, because sports does it all the time. And
right.
I just don't understand why. Just don't see the, maybe people don't pay attention to sports or something, so.
Well, and it's funny because you're in the medical world, so you would think that they would get the correlation, but I guess not.
No.
So aside from the just day-to-day physical support, you carried, and I'm sure still carry, an emotional, I don't know if I want to call it baggage or whatever, but an emotional tie to it. That one of my biggest concerns, being a cancer survivor now and doing the podcast and doing our nonprofit, is did you ever feel that you were allowed to express your feelings? I know you're not the most expressive guy when it comes to your feelings, but did you ever feel that you were allowed?
Yeah, I think I was given opportunities to. So it wasn't like I couldn't, because I had avenues, I had friends, I had family, but I think it was, a lot of it was by choice. It was,
you chose to
a lot of it was
it.
Me a lot of it, that's just my personality and how I dealt with it as a caregiver, because I felt like being in the moment that I was, I felt like I had to be the stronger one,
right?
So like how can I break down now when somebody is going to me, is right. going through a lot worse than I am.
Right.
I mean, that's the way I felt. I felt like, you know, someone's going through a lot worse than I am, so I have to be the strong one.
Right.
Because the stronger one isn't there right now.
Right. So does that, when you look back on that, do you think that served you well? In the sense that if you had to give another caretaker, caregiver, some advice Do you think that served you well, or do you think there is a better way to go about it, be more open, or do you think that that's exactly what you needed at that time for you, since this is obviously an individual experience for everybody? Do you think that served you well?
You know, honestly, I looking at it now, probably not, because right. I mean, obviously, just for me breaking down now, I think a lot of the emotions, like I said, being at it 7 years ago, a lot of it's coming out now because I didn't really
deal with it then.
I didn't. Yeah, it wasn't. I couldn't. Not that I couldn't deal with it. I dealt with it in my own way.
Right.
And you know, and it was fulfilling for me the way I dealt with it at the time, because as a caregiver, I think I feel like you were the rock. And I feel like when the rock's not there, someone else has to be the rock in a way. So I feel like someone has to be that strength. And that was, I felt like that had to be me. And, you know, I didn't want to show like a bit of weakness to it.
Sure.
You know, because then I felt like I was giving in, or I was succumbing to the worst of everything. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, you know that we were always on top of it, and we're going to be ahead no matter what.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely felt that as you guys were my supporters. I felt that this overwhelming sense of we got this, we're going to do this. No matter what they were saying, we kind of had this go get them. We're going to live in each immediate moment instead of worrying about what was going to happen in the future. Although I know those thoughts did cross my mind about the future and what ifs. And I know that's a hard question to ask, but did you have those same thoughts about the what ifs? Because I know, like I said, we tried to live in the moment and stay strong and as fighters, but did you have those thoughts of what if this doesn't work? What if she doesn't make it?
I don't see how you can avoid those thoughts. I mean, those thoughts just come. So like I say, a lot of times when they did, that's in a way, that's what gave me more strength, I guess.
Okay.
Because then I knew I had to pull from something as far as just being able to overcome those thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what made me a lot stronger in a way, in a sense, if that makes any sense. This is not scripted, obviously. So or I'm not reading the script correctly.
We fly by the seat of our pants here. What about being the parent to, we have five daughters, ages from 2 months to, I believe the twins were 18, turning 19.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's crazy to think of that. As a parent.
God, they were still teenagers.
Oh yeah.
My gosh. Ah.
As a parent to the five children and the husband, did that put a significant amount of pressure on you? Not in the sense that you weren't just worried about me and me and you as your wife. Like, here's these five kids that we have as well. And aside from the what ifs, did it concern you of what it could do to our family mentally and emotionally in the long term?
You know what? In a way, I wasn't completely worried, because I saw the outpouring support that we had from my family and from your family.
Right.
That I knew that if the what if did happen, I felt, you know, I felt a sense of comfort as far as knowing that I wasn't going to be alone.
Right.
And that's always the fearful thing is. Am I going to be alone in this whole thing?
Right.
This whole process. Because the thing is, being alone, because I was the only adult, everybody else was still kids.
Yeah.
I mean, the teenagers, the little ones. Yeah. Like, I would be the only adult. I'm like, that's the fear. I'm like, man, yeah. Now do I have to raise five kids by myself?
Right, like, right. Well, the weight of that had to be ridiculous, because not only we have these 18-year-olds that are just going out into the world and starting college, but we had a brand new baby.
Yeah.
A 2-month-old.
Well, and the thing is, I knew in my heart, I was like, I, you know, financially, I was like, I could do it financially.
Right.
I could support, and I've done it to this day to where I can support this family. And that wasn't the issue. Financially, I was like, I'm going to do whatever I can to financially get everybody through whatever hole we had to do. But it wasn't the financial aspect. It was just trying to get through, like you said, the burden of a lost one, the mental aspect,
yeah.
The emotions. Like I didn't want to be alone trying to deal with all that,
because
that would have been like,
yeah,
that would have been very overwhelming.
Yeah.
But knowing that, your side of the family, you're both, your parents, my parents, our extended family, our aunts and uncles, yeah. Our siblings, they were all there.
Yes.
And that to me, I'm like, they right away were like, no matter whatever happened, we're going to be there for you.
Right.
They didn't have to tell me that. I just knew
you
it.
You just knew that.
I just knew it because they were always there
yeah.
without having to say it,
So I think that's an important point to kind of hammer into our listeners, is that something you said was you felt the support of our extended family, our parents and stuff like that.
Even our friends.
And our friends.
Friends with us.
And so as listeners, as you may be a family member or a friend of or whatever, just know that your support can do something like what it's done for Tay with just giving that. He said it didn't even need to be said, that it was just, he knew that if something was to happen, those what ifs happened, that he had this support out there already. And so that's really, really crucial in talking about caretakers and what they go through. Them alone having that extended support system is so important. I think that's amazing, because not everybody has that, but if they have that, thank goodness. And, just let your people know. Let your people know you're there for them, and that you can, be a shoulder when they need. So tell me, for other caretakers out there, after what we are now 7 years into this, and I'm sure looking back at the beginning, we would have never thought 7 years from now we would still be dealing with the after effects, right? Where mental health has struggled, physical issues have arose. Does any of that surprise you, that we're this far out and we're still tackling some of these issues that affected me in the beginning? Speaking for myself, I could say that I know 7 years ago when I got this diagnosis, I would have never thought if I survived it, I would still have lasting effects, whether they're physical, mental, anything like that. I never really ever considered that it would affect me long term. Does that surprise you too, or is that something that you're not quite surprised about?
Not really surprising. I think anytime you have a life-changing moment,
mm-hmm.
In anything, whether it's whatever you're doing, and I feel like if it's life-changing enough and it affects your life, like the way cancer does, like to anything,
right?
It's traumatic. So anything that usually is traumatic, I think it's just one of those, that's why people have PTSD, because they just, it's a traumatic moment. And those moments are pearls in your life where you just don't forget them.
Right.
And it's always going to affect you. I think no matter what, no matter how much you try to forget it, no matter how much you try to push it away,
yeah.
they're always going to come back, because it was a key time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we want to forget those, I think it's better if we don't completely forget it, because I think, same thing with history, it's kind of a dumb thing, but for history to repeat itself, it's one of those things that's like, you don't want to forget it, because you want to remember how you,
right.
you push through it, how you remember. And that's what builds people the way they are. I mean, that's what builds them, their character, their personality,
shapes them.
yeah.
It shapes them into the people that they are and continue to become.
Yeah. And you're always, exactly, that's what it is. You're always trying to, you're never, as you go through life, even at 15, at 20, 30, you're still shaping yourself.
Right.
I think no matter how old you are. So you could be 45, 55,
yeah.
and I think you're still shaping yourself.
Sure.
Because, you have your ways, you have how you're set, how you are, but I mean, there's new things that come up now, and I'm, mid 40s, and I feel like either you're learning new stuff still, or you're becoming a different person still.
Yeah.
you know.
But, I think that's what one thing that surprised me is my age at the time, being 41, kind of thinking that kind of had it all together, nothing new to learn, been a nurse all these years, blah, blah, blah. And the dramatic change my life has taken and how much I had to learn from it and how much I've changed from it. In there were some really hard times, but in really good ways. And it's crazy to think like, F you cancer, but I've progressed a lot more in my life since my diagnosis.
Yeah. And it sucks because it's like, F you, but
yeah,
thank you.
But thank you, right?
Yeah. It's like, thank you for shaping this life that I have, because not saying that we wouldn't have progressed to where we're at, but thank you for building the person who I am now, because
yes.
I think that it grew me the biggest backbone that I needed.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just one of those, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I would have never had a backbone, but
in such a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's what I think about too. What path would I be on right now if it wasn't for cancer? My day in and day out is the cancer community. So it's kind of weird to think, obviously, I'd be doing something else.
Yeah, exactly.
But it shaped who I am and what I'm doing right now. And I'm happy in this world. So F you, cancer, but thank you in the same respect.
Yeah, same.
So, you know, it is such a mind F. It really is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The effects of cancer sucks, but like I said, especially if you come out on top,
right?
You know, you stay on top. And that's the thing about it. It's everlasting. So you have to stay on top of it, no matter what. So it's not just about let me overcome it this one day, but let me stay on top of it every single day, because I'm always going to be,
cancer. Survivor,
exactly.
Fighter, thriver.
And I'm always going to be there, cancer. But you know what? You're 10 steps behind me, and
right.
I'm gonna always try to stay 10 steps ahead of you.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. So as we were saying, F you, cancer, but thank you. Can you pinpoint or kind of describe anything that we're really grateful for since cancer?
I think for, just as a caregiver, and I'm hoping for cancer survivors too, I think it create like a different type of inner strength that somebody never had. I would have never in a million years thought, you don't say, let's give me cancer or give, someone that I love cancer, because I want to build that type of strength.
Right.
I want to, but I think that, knowing that we went through it, that's like something like, I can not just speak to, but like when I see somebody else, and they haven't went through it, I know that's something that I possess that they don't have. That's the strength that I know that I've dealt with.
Yeah, and you've conquered.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've conquered cancer, but
you conquered a cancer journey with your wife. That's huge.
Exactly. And the journey is the biggest thing. And that's what I feel like. That's a strength that I, it's like I said, it's those life moments that you have to have,
right?
Sorry, not to say you have to have it, but one of those ones that, if you do have it and you're able to overcome it, it's the biggest fulfilling moment, knowing that you had and have that strength to overcome a big thing. I mean,
you
come a long way to be able to squash cancer as much as you can,
And so, as Abby says, do hard shit.
Yeah. We can cuss on this?
Yeah, we can cuss on this. I mean, our name is Let's Talk Fucking Cancer. I don't know why I've been limiting my F today, but apparently.
I don't cuss a lot, so. Only if I get really emotional, I might start cussing.
You know I cuss all the time, but it is in our name. So what is something that you could or would say to other caretakers as they're going through this journey? Because as I said, we're always focused on the cancer patient, which is obviously first and foremost. But as another caretaker to another one, what is some advice or some tip that you could give them? Maybe that you didn't do yourself.
I mean, that's hard to speak to because I did things I kind of did things how I did it to I guess, self-fulfill what I needed to do.
Well, maybe if it's even that, give yourself the grace to do things on your own time or how you need.
I mean, I guess the biggest advice that I would probably give is, and not trying to diminish the idea of cancer, but give yourself an out to where whatever it is, if you need to vent, if you need to do something else, if you need to clean the house, if you need to
go play poker,
go be with your guys. I mean, be whatever. And that's stemming from that. I mean, that's how we created from this diagnosis. Me and one of my good buddies at work created the whole man camping thing.
Yeah.
Was from that. I mean, we gave ourselves an out because, you know, it was like, he said, you need to take a break from all this.
Yep.
Like, and you have to allow yourself that, you know, of being able to break away from it if you can, and take your mind off of it. And a lot of it, that's what I did. I distracted myself for many months or many years in that way.
Right.
Because you need that. Or vent. You know, honestly, mm-hmm. if you need that as well, if you need something, you need out to be able to, you know, talk to somebody that either relates or whatever, or just needs, you need to get everything off whatever you're thinking.
Right.
Do that as well.
Yeah. Did you ever feel guilt about either venting or about taking that time away?
Initially, I did.
Okay.
You always feel that way because,
sure.
I mean, why, you know, they're going through, like I said, I feel like anybody that's going through cancer is going through a much rougher time than anybody that's supporting them.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, especially if they're going through the whole ordeal of, you know, chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, you know, recovery, all those things. How can I think of myself at this time?
Right.
And not give shits about anybody else? You know, and that's my thing is, like, as a caregiver, you also have to take care of yourself, because if you can't take care of yourself first, how can you take care of somebody else?
Absolutely.
Same thing with the whole, they always tell you at the you know, because we just flew to Kansas about the oxygen thing.
Yep.
You know, help yourself first, because, I mean, if you can't breathe and you're pretty much dead, how can you help somebody else?
Right.
I mean,
and that's something as a cancer patient and someone who personally went through their journey, that I'm speaking for myself, but I bet I'm speaking for a lot of other cancer patients, is we want you to take care of yourselves. We want you to take that time. And that's the thing, is you were never like, I'm going out this weekend. It was a once a year trip, and you were doing something with your guys, or if you wanted to go play poker, or if you wanted to go play basketball. I was like, thank goodness that he's doing something for a little while for himself. And I'm sure that's something that's hard to wrap your mind around, but from the cancer patient to the caretaker, know that that was okay, and you deserve that grace.
Oh, and I appreciate that. It's because I started to see it more. Initially, it was hard to wrap my head around, because I'm, like I said, it was like, you know, how can I be selfish in this moment?
Sure.
But, you know, as the months and years kind of went by, I felt like, you know, it's what helped me cope with a lot of things.
It was good. It was needed.
It was good. Yeah, like you said, it was, because you still, you know, as a human being, you still need those interactions. You still need that type of, you know, not for everybody, but I'm just saying, for most people, you need those type of interactions to be just a regular human being.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
And you may not want to or feel comfortable talking to the cancer patient, because you may not feel like, well, I don't have a right. I don't want to put my shit on them. I blah, blah, blah. They don't need to hear my crap. 7 years later, I can say, oh, yes, you could have come to me. I don't know. I don't remember how I would have felt at the time. So I think it's important to find that person, find those people that you can talk to and that you can vent to, and you can do it freely without guilt, you know, and spend that time away. You know, you deserve to be away from it for a little while, because it's hard and it sucks.
It is. And I think you have to keep in the back of your mind that you're not abandoning the moment.
Absolutely.
You're not trying to escape and completely...
You're just taking care of yourself.
Exactly. You're not trying to run away, basically.
Right.
And I think that was the hardest part, because I felt like that's what was happening sometimes.
Sure.
Like, you know, am I running away from the moment when...
Helen, if you needed to run away at the moment, go ahead.
But I'm like, what's more important at this time? Like, what's more important?
Right.
Like, what's
and
number one?
You knew, yeah? I was taken care of. The kids were taken care of. So knowing those things, you got to allow yourself that space and that grace.
And it took a while. It took a while to do that.
Sure.
Even the whole man camping thing, like, I was just like, I can't. Like, how is that even possible?
Right.
And then after, you know, a couple of like weeks, probably a couple months of just formulating something,
mm-hmm.
we were just like, all right, man, let's just do it. Let's do it. It makes sense. I mean, it makes complete sense, because...
You all need to get away and do something. It's good for you all.
You know, and it, you know, whether it be cancer or something, something different, it's just one of those escapes that you just kind of need just to just get away.
Yeah.
You know, and do whatever it is. Guy things, friend things,
right.
Caregiver things, whatever it is that you need to do to get away and give yourself the out.
Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing, because then you can do that and know that you're coming back. Not like a
kind
new
of refreshed.
Person, but yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's rejuvenating to know that you can still enjoy life and then come back in a way
to the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense, because, I mean, you definitely have to refill your tank.
Yeah. It's a great way to put it. Good way to put it. It's just pretty much refilling that tank, because it really is pretty much dry, and you need something to just fill it back up, and then you now can take on whatever at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Because cancer fucking sucks.
It does.
It really does. From a caretaker's perspective, we had a great support system, and not everybody has that, which is one of the main reasons why we came up with Waze. But from the support that we were getting, and I mean, I was just very lucky. I got to lay on the couch and accept all the offerings. But you were the one kind of in charge and managing food and this and this and this. What were some of the best things that you could tell other people listening that, hey, even if you're not a caretaker, you can do this, something like the meal trains or anything like that? What did you find the most helpful that we were receiving at the time?
You know, honestly, the meals were great, because I think there were... unplanned, honestly.
It was amazing.
I mean, it was a outpouring of support from not just like from family, but like friends.
Yeah.
And that was one of the greatest things is the meals. But honestly, it's really that and just showing that they loved us as their own family.
Yeah.
You know, family and friends, but they set show of love and support, I think was probably one of the greatest things to see is the outpouring of love and support.
Right.
Whether it be meals or just being there.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a text or a call. Or that's one of the biggest things that I asked people when I got diagnosed is, please check on my husband and my kids separately from me, because it's always going to be House Colette, but check on them individually. And I had hoped that's what had happened. And it felt like from you and the big girls, especially, it's what they received was a lot of outpouring of how are you doing versus House Colette? Oh, do you need anything? Because how you were doing is very important, you know? And I don't know if you remember, we were taught when I was first diagnosed, I was taught to see myself in the center of a circle. Do you remember this? It was me in the center. So the cancer patient. And then the next circle out was you and our kids. And the circle out from that was like my parents, my brothers and sisters. And there were circles all the way out. And you were never allowed to dump inwards. You could only dump outwards. So nobody was allowed to dump in on me, which I don't know if was super fair, because I think I could have taken some of it, but it was like, I could dump out to you guys could dump out to the next ring and so forth. But it was like, I felt like all our rings outside of you guys came together and started really checking on you guys and making sure you guys were okay. Yeah. And that was one of my biggest hopes, is that it wouldn't be just about me, but people would be checking on you guys as well.
Oh yeah, I definitely felt that way. So
good.
That was, like I said, it was one of the best things ever, as far as just seeing it from your side of the family, my side of the family.
Yeah.
And then
co-workers and friends. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We had the best support. And again, listeners, we know not everybody has that same type of support. And that's why we founded our nonprofit, Ways We Are Your Support, to provide free of charge any of our services to the cancer community who does not get that kind of support. We would love to be your support system. So always remember, you can reach out to us at any time. Okay, so coming from my standpoint as the wife and the cancer patient, and this might be a sensitive topic, but I'm sure it's something that other listeners and patients have thought about and gone through. Were you concerned, or I don't know exactly how to put it, but the intimacy portion, was that a concern to you during treatment, during recovery, any of that time? Because I know going through chemotherapy, first of all, you're given a cancer diagnosis. So what partner wants to be like, hey, let's go, baby? So I know that that can become a topic that not a lot of people maybe talk about or feel comfortable talking about. And I don't know that we ever discussed it, but we dealt with it our own ways. And you are given instructions on if you've had chemo, no intimacy for X amount of days, blah, blah, blah. But was that something that you felt uncomfortable with? Were you nervous to approach me? Were you like, how dare I even think about this because she's going through cancer?
Honestly, I don't even know if I even thought about that. Crazy enough. I felt like there was already a lot on the plate.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess it was a thought there, but it wasn't pressing on me.
Okay.
Cause like I said, I knew you were going through what you were going through.
Right.
And I just, you know, and it's just my character and the way I am. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, you know, if you were in the mood, or if,
right.
if it's that time, whatever, then I'll be much obliged, I think, at that point.
But it wasn't, you know, something heavily weighing on your mind?
For me, no. I mean,
was there any guilt associated with maybe wanting to approach the subject?
I mean, I don't know if there's... No, there wasn't any guilt.
Okay.
I think it was just... I mean, I could see it really weighing on a relationship.
Sure.
You know, I could see it, you know, being... It could tear a lot of people apart because of that.
Right.
Because I think every, you know, husband and wife want that part of, they want to be intimate. They want, right, to be able to
get down and dirty.
That's what I'm saying. You know, I was going to use a cuss word, but, you know, sorry, make love.
But I think it's important to talk about, because that's something that maybe a husband or a wife doesn't want to bring up to their spouse that's battling cancer. And maybe they had a very active, you know, sex life before.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's something that definitely deserves to be addressed. And I don't know that we ever talked about it. I don't remember it being an issue, but there were rules put in place and there were stipulations put in place and stuff like that we had to follow by the doctors. But I didn't know, as the spouse of, if there was any kind of weirdness in that area, any guilty feelings for wanting
like
it.
I said,
or...
I know it's hard, because like I said, it's one of those things that, and I've, you know, I'm true to the things that, you know, we stay or we exchange. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, like I said, with our vows and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and you hope the intimacy is going to be a part of it, but mm-hmm. you still have to work through all the little kinks of everything else.
Sure.
As well too, you know? So, and those were the little kinks that, you know, I told myself, we'll get through this and it's going to be better. And
right.
We're going to see brighter days.
Okay.
We're going to hit those moments where everything will be back to quote unquote normal.
Right.
You know, and you just have to keep telling yourself that almost.
Right.
You know, because there will be a day that happens.
Sure.
Especially if you're on top of of the diagnosis and and progressing really well through it.
Right.
Know? And that's the way I felt. I felt that's
something we would get through
gonna
eventually.
Come, it's going to come one day and it's going to be better than ever, hopefully.
Well, so now I have a question on, and I haven't suffered this as much, not that I don't, I've had my own body image issues in the past, but many women or maybe men, depending on your surgery or scars or whatever, have body image issues afterwards. And intimacy can be an issue because of their own feelings with their own self-image. Did you notice that playing a part at all afterwards?
With myself or with
me?
With how you were feeling?
Yes. Just from surgeries and chemos and feeling not so beautiful, having a bald head.
Oh, like, for sure. I mean, yeah, you have to be aware of all that, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, that's one of the things I was very cognizant of.
You were.
You know, and honestly, to me, I feel like it was just a blip in the moment and mm-hmm. it wasn't like it was going to be like this forever.
Right.
And that's the hope you can always make it's a dark time.
Yeah.
So it's like things will get better. Things will hopefully, the sun's going to shine eventually.
Right.
You know.
All right. So coming on the closing of Mr. Huang joining us today.
Oh my gosh, we're closing already?
Well, do you have more to share with us? More wisdom?
Not really wisdom. I think I don't know if I've ever shared this part with you, and it's something I've always, every single day, I think the minute you were like diagnosed, and I can't remember if I've ever told you this, but I feel like I've always wished it was me.
Here's my thing on it. Oh, and I hate to sound cliche, but God gave me what I could handle. I couldn't have handled it being you.
I think I've always felt that way because, I mean, not to brag on like how I felt like my character was, but I felt like I was a very strong person.
Yeah.
To where I felt like, I don't know, I was strong enough to see somebody else go through it.
Right.
Like someone that I loved. So yeah, every day I always just wished it was me because it just felt like I felt like I was always going to have the mental capacity,
right?
The physical aspect of it, everything. Right. I thought I was going to be able to myself just overcome it,
right?
And I just didn't think I would be able to be the bystander and see somebody else go through it, you know. And I just, like I said, it's not a whole I'm better than you, but I just felt like I felt like I was going to be a weaker person if I saw somebody else that I love go through it.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, whether it was you or kids or this and that, it was just, it's harder, I feel like. I feel like I'd rather just be the person.
Yeah, than be the one standing by.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Because I definitely think that I couldn't have watched someone else go through it, you know.
Yeah, because it's weird because people... if they were going through it, and it's always the whole, you know, why me? Why me? And I was always sitting there going, like every day I was like, why not me?
Right.
Like why?
Right.
Like why her? Why couldn't it be me?
Yeah.
Like I'd rather it be that because like, do I have the strength to do this?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to lose somebody.
Yeah.
That I truly deeply love.
Yeah.
Because then, how is that going to affect me after that?
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's weird to say, but at times I think I had the easier job as a patient, and I know that sounds insane, but I didn't have to watch it.
Yeah, I think that's makes sense.
Yeah.
I think just watching it was a very difficult time, so.
Yeah, it was.
I think that's why I coped the way I cope.
Keeping it all in.
Yeah, I mean, it's made more sense at the time.
Well, I just want to say that I appreciate the first time that you opened up with me about it, although it's just you and I in this room right now talking and all our listeners. I appreciate you opening up to me.
You wasn't supposed to make me cry, Roy.
I know. You know, and that's one thing that just like sitting here chatting with you, like it's just you and I in our little studio chatting. We know that, you know, people are going to be listening, but you're saying things that are so important. And if we can bring tears to our eyes 7 years later, what about that patient today? What about that wife or that husband today that has become the caretaker? And what can we do for them? You know, because the patient is going to be the focus. That's just the way it's going to be. And yes, it should be that way. But these caretakers and our family, our friends, our loved ones who are being the other person for us, our, you know, our right hands during this time, you're going through some shit and you deserve to be acknowledged, you know, and we deserve to give you that space to talk about it. Because I don't know that the caretakers are very well taken care of, you know?
I just want to say that I'm glad there's no video.
As we are in our pajamas. With snotty noses.
I'm like and a water fountain over here.
Swollen eyes. But yes, you know, this conversation can provoke emotions 7 years later. So I think it's an important topic. So I thank you.
It was good. It was a good release.
Yeah. And I thank you for being here with me today. Like, we have never had this conversation, just the two of us. So I appreciate you doing it with me recorded. Well,
thank you. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. I'd love to have you back. Well, thank you, Tae Huang. I love you dearly. And I hope you will come back on our show soon.
Of course. And I love you too.
All right, listeners, and that is our spotlight episode for this month of April. Please join us next week for our professional series. And if you have any topics you'd like us to cover or you have someone you'd like us to spotlight, please email us at podcast@weareyoursupport.com and follow us on all of our social media at LTFC_podcast. Listen to us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all of your podcasting platforms. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
We are your support. Thank you for talking cancer.